I don't know about you guys, but when it comes to this time of year, I almost can't help it. I begin to get very sentimental, begin to get very nostalgic about Christmases past. I think that's especially taken place as I've gotten older and as I've had kids, and I watch them, I see the excitement of Christmas through their eyes, and invariably I start going back to Christmases past and what were some of my favorite Christmases as a kid? What were some of the things that I enjoyed or that I received that were really important to me? Now, for those of you who know me well, you would not be surprised to know that when I was a kid, one of the things that I really loved was computers. Really loved computers. And so it's not shocking that one of my best Christmas gifts ever was 1982 when I received my first computer. Now, I've got a picture of this bad boy. It was the Radio Shack TRS-80 color computer. It had a whopping 4K of memory. About all you could do with it was you could plug little cartridges in and play really, really simple games, and it had a basic interpreter, so you could write basic computer language code and write programs that you got out of magazines. So that's what I did on Christmas morning. Yes, I'm a huge nerd. I wrote computer code, but I loved it. I mean, I absolutely loved it. It began my love affair with technology, and so I decided from that early age that that's what I was going to do. I was going to work with computers for the rest of my life. So when I graduated high school and went to college, enrolled in a program of study, computer engineering, and this was it. This is what I was going to do. My path was really clear, and I was really excited about it. But it didn't take long before that plan ran into some challenges. Freshman year of college, I took the first basic introduction to programming language. This is the first basic computer science class, and I just got creamed. First assignment came, I did it, turned it in, F, failed it, completely failed it. So, all right, well, I'll just try a little harder. So, next assignment came, did it again, same exact result. And the third assignment came, and this feeling began to well up inside of me, this helpless, hopeless feeling of this is what I wanted to do with my life, and I suck at it. I'm terrible at it. What do I do? And then this fear began to rise up that I don't think I can make, this is my very first computer class, and I'm not cutting it. Maybe I should just quit. Maybe I should just quit. Maybe I should just find something else to study. Maybe college isn't for me after all. I don't know. Have you ever been in a situation like that? A situation where your future and your direction seems so very, very clear to you. And then you ran into a roadblock. You ran into something that happened that just suddenly you just wanted to throw up your hands and walk away. Maybe for you it was school. Maybe you had a similar kind of experience in school where you just ran into a test or a class or a professor you just couldn't get past. And you just thought, maybe I just need to quit. Maybe it's in your career that you ran into something like that. You changed jobs, changed careers, and you got into this new situation where you'd been so confident in what you'd been doing in the past, and you'd had success up until that point, and then you just felt like, I just can't do this anymore. I need to just walk away. Maybe it's relationships. This has been true for many of us. You know, you're probably dating that really cute guy, and things were going great. You got so excited. And then you got engaged and things were perfect and you got married and it was going so really well. And then the first year of marriage, the shine began to come off just a little bit, didn't it? You know, things start to get a little bit challenging. Suddenly, all of his cute eccentricities weren't so cute anymore. He was a little annoying and frustrating. You begin to argue, disagree more. And then a couple, 3, 5, 7, 10 years down the road, you look at this person and you wonder how you're going to get through another day. How are you going to get through another argument or disagreement? And maybe you married the wrong person. Maybe there's someone else out there that you were supposed to marry. We've all been in these kinds of situations, whatever they may be. And the question is, what do we do when we come to these kinds of situations, when we embark on something really important, really meaningful, really significant in life, and we run into these roadblocks? How do we think about these things that happen to us all the time? And what do we do? How do we respond? As Norton said, this month is the month of Advent. And it's a time for us to reflect on the concept, the idea of waiting. Waiting for things. And I think sometimes when we think about waiting, we think about it as a very passive sort of activity. But in my life, my experience, my observation, waiting is very rarely like the kind of waiting you do in the doctor's office or at the auto mechanics where you're just sitting there waiting. Isn't waiting usually a very active kind of thing where you're anticipating something that's out in the future, but you're not just sitting passively, you're actually working towards it. You're trying to move in a particular direction. And sometimes in that pursuit, usually in the most important things in our lives, we will run into things, run into challenges, circumstances, people, obstacles. And the question is, what do we do when we run into those? So the story I want to look at today, I think, is a microcosm of what can happen and what I think the scripture has to say, what the Bible has to say about these kinds of experiences when we run into these things as people of faith. So today we're going to take a look at a very familiar story. It's one that probably everyone here knows at some level or another, and it's the Exodus story. So if you have your Bibles, we're going to start today in the book of Exodus, which is on page 49 of the Bibles and seats in front of you. We're also going to put this on the screen today so you can follow along. So as I said, this story is one that is probably instantly familiar to all of us at some level or another. Either you've read the Bible story or you've seen some adaptation of this story in a movie, right? Like either Charlton Heston, Ten Commandments, or Prince of Egypt. Maybe your kids made you watch that one. Or I haven't even seen the latest one, the Christian Bale, Exodus, Gods and Kings. So the story you're probably generally familiar with, but it is this. It is central to Israel's history. You can take that verse down until we get to it, TJ. If you could just hold off on that, it'd be great. Just go back to there you go. So it's a story of Israel in their history. Because of a famine, they got relocated to Egypt. They moved to Egypt because of a famine. And while there, they had the favor of Pharaoh, the king, because of one of the central figures. And this time, Israel wasn't really a nation. It was a family. And one of the brothers had favor with the king of Egypt. And while they were there, they were able to live there and live. While the rest of the surrounding nations were undergoing a famine, they had plenty. And so they were able to live there, and they grew, and this small family, this little tribe, began to grow. And they had kids, and their kids had kids, and over the generations, they became hundreds of thousands of people. They became a nation within Egypt. And over time, the ruling government within Egypt forgot any favor that they had towards these people, and they began to oppress them. They began to be worried about them rising up and overthrowing the Egyptians, and so they began to force them into hard labor, force them into slavery. But the Israelite people, the Jewish people, called out to their God, called out to Yahweh, while they were in slavery, and God sent this man Moses. We all know this story, right? Moses comes. God, through a miraculous series of events, leads the people of Israel out of Egypt, out of slavery. And the final, most miraculous event is when they are leaving Egypt and they're being pursued by the Egyptian army. And they come to the Red Sea and Moses holds up his staff. I can see Charlton Heston in my mind as I'm talking about this. And the waters part and the Israeli people walk across the dry land through the Red Sea to the other side. And the waters close in on the Egyptians that are pursuing behind them. That's the point where we're picking up this story today. That has just happened. They have cried out their whole lives for deliverance out of slavery. God has sent a deliverer in Moses. They have gone through, seen all these miraculous things. Now they're on the other side, and they are being led by Moses towards a land that had been promised to their ancestor Abraham generations before, a land that would be fruitful, it would be theirs. It was clear where they were headed, what they were headed toward was good. It was abundant. It was something they were all looking forward to, they had longed for, they prayed for. And now is the point they're starting to move in that direction. Chapter 15 of Exodus begins with this song that they sing as they come out, as they've just come out of the Red Sea. They're singing this song of triumph and praising God. But it doesn't take long before they hit the first snag. They start to run out of water. And immediately the people begin to freak out. They start grumbling and complaining. They come to a spring, and the spring isn't very drinkable. It's very bitter, but God provides a solution. And what we see is this pattern begins to emerge where they run into problems and they're faced with a decision. What are we going to do? They call out to God, and God helps them, and they continue moving forward. So this is where we're picking up in the story in chapter 16, starting in verse 1, where we read, "The whole Israelite community set out from Elim," which is where they found the springs, where they found the water, "and they came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you've brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." So here's what's going on. So they are moving forward towards this promised land, this promise of freedom and abundance that God has given them. And they're starting to hit problems along the way. And in this verse, I think what we see is a microcosm of what can happen when we run into problems ourselves. Because they've just come through these miraculous series of events. They've just had these amazing things happen to them. But when they hit problems, they seem to forget all of those. They seem to only see the problems. Look at what they're saying. They're saying, it would be better if we were dead. It would be better if we had just died in Egypt than to come out here and to be in this desert and to die here. And there are three things that I think we see as we look at their reaction to these problems. Three things that I think we sometimes can run into, the temptations that we run into when we're pursuing after something significant in our life and we run into problems. The first thing that they do, the first thing that we see is that they become consumed with their present circumstances and their troubles. All they can see is what's right in front of them, the problem that is right before them, which is understandable. Let's be honest, okay? So they're 2 months into this journey. They've already run out of water, and yes, God solved that problem, but now they're starting to run out of food. And they don't see any logical conclusion. They're in a desert, okay? Like they spent 2 months in a desert. Let's don't be too hard on them. They have a right to freak out a little bit. They're running out of food. They need food, and they're not exactly sure what's going to happen. So as human beings, this is what we're hardwired to do. We become laser-focused on the problem. We become laser-focused on the difficulty that's right in front of us. At its extreme, this is the fight-or-flight response, right? Like when you're going through the jungle and you come face-to-face with a tiger, you don't like contemplate the world's problems. You think, how do I get out? Like you're focused on the problem that's right in front of you, right? This is what they begin to do. They get laser focused on their problems. The problem is we don't have food. I can't see any way out of this situation. The only way that we can get out of this is to go back where we know where there was food, back to Egypt. We should just go back. We should quit and go back. But the problem is this sort of narrowed focused thinking, it's great in the short term. It helps our survival, but we usually aren't making great long-term decisions when we were in this place. Which leads to the second observation, which is this, that when they become consumed with their present circumstances, they lose perspective on the bigger picture of what's going on. And they also forget God's faithfulness in the past. 2 months ago, they walked through a wall of water on dry land that God separated from them. He's shown up for them. Just a few weeks before, they ran out of water, and he provided for them. But now they're absolutely convinced that there's no chance, there's no way forward. Their only hope for them is to turn their back on this fool's errand that Moses and God has led them out on, and they need to go backwards, back to Egypt, which is the third thing that I see. They create this idealized picture, this idealistic fantasy to which they want to go back to. So here they are, they're sitting around in the desert, and they say, it would be better if we were dead, it would be better if we died in Egypt. You know what, maybe we should go back to Egypt. Remember Egypt? Oh, man. Remember the pots of food? Remember the food we used to sit around? Oh, the food, the meat was so good, and those vegetables, they were so fresh. Yeah. I mean, I know we were oppressed and in slavery for generations, and I know we were forced into hard labor. Sometimes until we died, our kids had no hope, they had no future, but man, the food was so amazing. They create this idealized fantasy of what Egypt had been like, what slavery had been like, and they begin to think that, man, it would be better if I could just go back. And I think right here is a microcosm of what can happen even to us when we face challenges or difficulties. We can become hyper-focused on the thing that's right in front of us. We can forget the bigger picture, the journey that we're on, and the ways that God's been faithful to us in the past. And we can often create idealized fantasy situations that are way easier than the real actual things that are right in front of us. When our job gets difficult and our boss is unreasonable and the work is hard and we don't enjoy it, of course it's easier to think about another job. Of course, a hypothetical job where the boss will be nicer and the work will be easier and more fulfilling. And it's tempting to want to say, I just want to quit and walk away. Of course, in a marriage, it's when you run into challenges and difficulties, which are inevitable. People change, people grow, we go through different seasons of life, which cause stress, and we will inevitably have problems in our real relationships with our real spouses. And it's always going to be easier to say, there's someone else out there. Marriage is not supposed to be this hard. There's someone else out there with whom this would be easier. And the question, when we come to these situations, is how do we respond? Do we give in to the temptation? Do we give in to the focus of on the problem that's right in front of us? Do we give in to the temptation of a more idealized, easier situation that's somewhere out there that we can move towards? Or do we continue moving forward step by step, believing that this thing that we've been called toward, this thing that we've been called into, this relationship, this job, this direction in our life is what God has for us, and we just need to keep taking steps forward, one day after the others. For the Israelites, this became a cycle. The whole story of the Exodus was this. They ran into these problems and God would resolve them and things were good for a little while, but then they would run into another problem and every time they would be tempted to want to go back. They were constantly grumbling against the leadership, constantly grumbling against Moses and against Aaron and saying, maybe we should go back, until finally they came to the conclusion, we need to keep moving forward. And they kept moving forward until finally they were on the doorstep of this land that God had promised them. They were right outside of this promised land that God said to Abraham generations before he was going to give to the Israelite people. And this was going to be the place that they were going to become a great nation. And through them that the whole world was going to be blessed. So they're finally there and they send spies into the land to find out what it's like. What's the land actually like? And who's there? How difficult is it going to be for us to enter into this land? And so the spies spend 40 days there. For 40 days, they're checking out who's in the land, what does the land look like, and they come back and they give a report. 10 out of the 12 say, it's no good. It's no good. We need to turn back now. In fact, we need to get out of here because if those people that we just saw found out that we're even thinking about this, we are dead. We are so dead. They are so much bigger than us. They will crush us. They will kill us. I mean, I actually think they're giants. I don't think they're actually human beings. I think they're giants. They're huge. They're scary. We just need to get the heck out of here. Once again, the Israelites face a decision. There is a problem before them. God has called them into this land. He said he's going to provide it for them. But between them and the land stand the inhabitants. And they're scared. They're afraid of what's going to happen. And then once again, they face this decision. So what do? Numbers chapter 14. We're going to skip to the book of Numbers. We'll put it on the screen. You don't have to look it up. Chapter 14, verse 1, it says, that night, after all the spies came back and gave them this report, that night all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron. That word grumbled is throughout the Exodus story, over and over and over. And the whole assembly said to them, if only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness, why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to each other, we should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Here they are. They've been through so much. They've been called out of slavery. They followed Moses through the Red Sea, out into the desert. God's provided for them each step along the way. It hasn't been easy, but they've taken steps. They've kept moving forward. And here they are, right on the doorstep, right on the edge. And they finally hit a wall. And this is it. They said, we can't go any further. We're not going into the land. Regardless of what God says, regardless of, we just can't see any possible way around this problem. And so God says, okay, have it your way. And God says, for your total disobedience in the face of my faithfulness to you, I'm going to let you have what you wanted. You're on your own. this entire generation, all who saw me do the wonders to bring you out of Egypt and turned their back on me, who quit and gave up and walked away, you're going to wander a year for every day that the spies sent in the land. 40 years until finally everyone who was an adult and saw the wonders that I did and turned your back on me, until you've all passed away and your children will be the one who inherit the promises. God didn't turn his back on Israel, but he let Israel turn their back on him and have exactly what they wanted. So the Israelites spent the next 40 years going nowhere, wandering around in circles in the desert, until one by one, each member of that generation died and their children inherited the promises that God had given them. And in the generations that would follow, this story became part of the national identity of Israel, the national identity of the Jewish people. And it still is to this day. The Exodus story was a framing story, a framing narrative about the way that they thought about what it meant to walk in faith with their God. It was a story that they could look back on and they understood as how God had brought them through a series of difficulties, through miracles and wonders and amazing things, and how they had turned their back on God, but God remained faithful to them. And as they told the story, they recognized that the story wasn't only a story of the historical past. It was also the story of their experience. And the Exodus story, just like it was the Jewish people's story, it's still our story. It's the story of every person who's attempting to walk in faith with God through the journey of life. Because all of us have been in some form of slavery. If you're here today and you're in a relationship with God, you'd say you're moving forward on that path. And I know that's not everybody here today. But if you're here today and you've taken that step, you understand what it means to be in slavery, right? You can think back to some point in your life where you were debilitated by some kind of pattern of behavior, some destructive thought pattern or behavior pattern, greed or lust or jealousy. You were enslaved by that and you called out to God. And you felt like, I think maybe this journey might be better if God's a part of my life. And you called out to him and he met you in some way, right? And then you began taking steps of faith, moving forward. And invariably, you ran into problems. You ran into difficulties along the way. And God met you in those. And step by step, he continues to walk with you throughout those problems. We've all encountered those difficulties, and we've had a thought at some point or another, be it large or small, that maybe this faith thing isn't what it's cracked up to be. Maybe God isn't so real. Maybe I just need to go back to my pattern of living before. Maybe I just need to go back to some new form of a new variation of slavery, to just living the way that all the rest of the world lives. The story of Exodus calls out to all of us and reminds us that the journey of faith with God is a whole life journey, and it is not without challenges. It is not without difficulties. And in each one of those, we have to decide, how will we respond? How will we react? Will we continue to take steps forward in faith, walking where he calls us to go? Or will we throw up our hands and walk away and turn back? Now, you may be sitting here and listening to this and saying, "Now, Stephen, are you saying that really all we're supposed to do is just keep moving forward in life? Just have a positive attitude and keep moving forward. Just charge through all those barriers in life. Just keep moving forward no matter what." Not exactly. It's not exactly that simple. Because you see, sometimes you have to recognize that barriers are a way of changing your direction. I withdrew from that class. I failed that class totally, miserably, horribly. But I enrolled for it the next semester, picked a different teacher, did learn something out of that whole thing. And I got through it by the skin of my teeth. And that wasn't the last difficult class that I had in college. That wasn't the last time I had to really work and grind and get through something. And eventually I got a degree in computer engineering. And I spent a period of time working in the field of technology, which was my childhood dream. But you may have noticed that's not where I spend most of my time these days. Some point or another in my life, it's a longer story, God redirected me. Changing direction doesn't mean quitting or giving up. And there are times in our life where God will use the circumstances to change our directions. But there are other times where God will use difficulties or challenges to be able to call us to persevere, to build muscles of strength and endurance. I look back on my time in college and I'm so thankful for that time of being really forced and challenged to persevere through something, because it taught me something that's been really valuable in life about how to discern when you're trying to do something significant, when you keep going. Almost anything important that we'll do in life will run into difficulties. But there are times to change directions. So how will we know? How do we know when we change directions, when God's bringing difficult circumstances to cause us to move in a new direction? Or how do we know when he's just calling us to persevere through? Sorry, I don't have an easy answer for that one. I'm not Anthony Robbins. This is not self-help. I don't have like 5 steps to making better decisions to make your life succeed. This is about walking in a whole life journey with God. And the truth is, sometimes you're going to face circumstances that everyone around you is going to say, just quit, just walk away. It's never going to work. But you know, you just need to hang in there. You just need to keep going. You know that God's called you to that. And that's the path that you're called to walk, and God walks it with you. There's going to be other times that everything seems like you could get through this. This isn't that bad. And you just know in the pit of your stomach, no, actually, I'm pursuing this because of my ego. I'm pursuing this because of my pride. I'm pursuing this because of really bad motives. And I think God's using these difficulties to be able to wake me up and get me to change direction. How will you know that? You know that by walking daily in a relationship with God and with other people who are on that same journey. We all have to work that out. There's no easy formula or answer to how we do that. The book of Exodus is not a story. It's not a self-help story. It's a story that's all of our story, that all of us have been called by God out of slavery, out of the patterns of sin and brokenness of our lives. And part of what we need to recognize is that all of our individual stories, all of our individual experiences of difficulties and challenges are wrapped up into a much, much bigger story. It's especially appropriate that we remember that at Advent. Because you see, all of us who are on this journey of faith have been called out of slavery, called out of the sin and the brokenness that is in the world and is in us, and we've been rescued by God. But we're in the wilderness. You have to remember the bigger picture. Don't just see the problems that are in front of you. See the bigger context and recognize we right now are in the wilderness. We're in the time in between Jesus' first coming and his second coming. And Jesus said, he told us this, in this world you will have problems, guaranteed. But he said, take heart, because I have overcome the world. We're not yet where we want to be. We're still being led towards a promised land, towards the kingdom of God, the fullness of God's restoration and reconciliation of the whole world. Jesus will return. That's what Advent is about for us. Not only looking back to Jesus' first coming and a beautiful baby in a manger, but looking forward to a king returning and setting everything right. And our hearts yearn for that. In all of our small stories where we experience sickness and brokenness and tough bosses and all the rest, cause us to long for what we don't have yet. And all of those challenges that come will challenge us to get focused on those problems, to lose perspective, and to want to give up and walk away. That is the journey of faith that you and I have been called to. And it's a daily choice that we have to make. And so today, as we close, I can't think of a better way to close today's message than to celebrate communion together. Communion is a celebration that Jesus initiated with his last meal together with his disciples, and it was the Feast of Passover. Passover is the Jewish celebration where they think back and they remember, they tell the story of the Exodus. And they remember God's faithfulness in the past, and they remember the cautionary tale of what's at stake when we give up and we walk away from God. So Jesus gathered together with his disciples, his closest friends that night, and they celebrated the Passover meal, just as Jews still do today. And they told the Exodus story as they had done every year of their life. But this night was going to be different, because Jesus as they sat and they broke the bread that night, the unleavened bread made without yeast to remember the Israelites who left in such a hurry they didn't have time for the dough to rise and it baked on their backs as they carried along. Jesus broke the unleavened bread that night and he said, in the future, when you gather together and you remember God's faithfulness, also remember that this is my body, which will be broken for you. And that night as the feast progressed and they poured the cups of wine, they came to the third cup, the cup of redemption, where they remembered how God had redeemed them and called them out of Israel. And Jesus poured the wine. And that night he said, this is like my blood, which is poured out for your redemption, for the forgiveness of sins. So Jesus calls us to the table of communion to remember that we are still on a journey. We're still waiting. We're still waiting for the fullness of what he promised us, that he will come back, that he will return. So today, as the band plays, the table is set up in the back, and I invite all of you who are on that journey of faith to come to the table, break the bread, dip it in the wine, take it. And as you come, bring all the challenges and difficulties that you're facing today, all the temptations that you have to turn around and go back to Egypt, bring them to the table. And remember the promises that God has made. Remember this Advent season, what we're waiting for. Remember the goodness that's still out there and available to us. Bring those to the table and remember Jesus this morning.